to A Jungian and a Witch podcast. I'm your co-host, Molly, the queen behind Queen of Cups Apothecary and your resident witch. This is my dad, Steve, a Jungian analyst with over 30 years experience, a master's in divinity, and a myth expert. Join us as I get the Jungian perspective on a wide range of witchy topics. Hello and welcome back to another episode. Apologies for this episode coming out a little bit late. There's a bit of an issue with the audio in that it was really hot when we were recording and Dad had a fan on in his office. When we recorded it, we did not hear any issues, but on the playback, there is a bit of an echo on Dad. So we've been playing around with the audio. We think we've got it pretty good. There are definitely some instances that you can still hear it, but just know that we know it's an issue and it won't happen again. So chalk it down to beginner and learning and all that fun stuff. Today we're talking about imposter syndrome. We are talking about the ways that it shows up for us and in the witch community and ways that we can work with this when it shows up in our lives. So I hope you enjoy our conversation and I'll see you on the other side. All right, Dad. Here we are for another week.
Good to see you. Hi, summer, you know.
Yeah. How was your fourth?
Very quiet. Except for the explosions, it was quiet.
Yeah, you live next to a lake and people like to set off fireworks. You're also in New Hampshire, you know, so yes, live so, free and die, which is what we say.
live free and blow your hand off.
You know? Yep.
It's okay. The government does not interfere if you want to be stupid. So there
right?
you go. Who well, knows?
I hope they might be the right attitude.
I don't know. It was less than I'm surprised.
Yeah, Mom said they had a designated time this year so that hopefully people would do it in the designated time rather than just all day and all night. So hopefully that worked out for you.
Most people are very good about doing exactly what they're told to do.
Yeah, really. And sticking. That's amazing.
He said sarcastically, okay.
Oh, okay. I was like, really?
No.
Usually there's like not, those people at one not, in the morning that are yes, still setting them up.
Exactly. Not really. Okay.
Not really. That's funny. Okay, well, today we are talking about something that I've wanted to talk about for a while, and it's very buzzy all over, you know, the social medias, especially in the witch community. I don't think you could scroll through Witch Talk or Instagram and not see this come up, and that is imposter syndrome. So I see it all the time, every day. I mean, if you look it up, there's herbs for imposter syndrome and crystals for imposter syndrome and, you know, spells for imposter syndrome and all this stuff about it. And I'm not sure the witch community is actually using the term right. And so that's why I wanted to talk to you about it and sort of get our, you know, we have our baseline of terminology that we've gone through. We are on episode 17, Dad.
I don't know where the time goes.
Right? It just slips by. I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts and they're always like, I don't understand where the time went. And I'm starting to feel that because it's like, how are we on 17 episodes? But here we are. We've done it. Right. So imposter syndrome. I looked it up and so I found, you know, a bunch of like Psychology Today, right? Says people struggle with imposter syndrome, believe they are undeserving of their achievements in the high esteem in which they are in fact generally held. They feel as though they are not as competent or intelligent as others think, and that soon enough, people will discover the truth about them. I think that that's like, it's okay of a definition. One that I liked better was there's an article from the Biophysical Society about imposter syndrome, and they describe it as the dilemma between who we are and who we are perceived to be. And I think I like that one a little bit better. It says imposter syndrome is a chronic inability to properly internalize our own accomplishments, leading to feelings of incompetence not supported by external evidence. So it's this feeling that we're not good enough, that we're faking it, that we're, you know, it's like fake it till you make it, but like the opposite, because it's like we've somehow got here, but we don't understand how we've gotten here, or why we're being held in such esteem. And it comes up a lot in the witch community, because there is this belief that when you're doing spell work, if you don't believe in what you're doing, that none of it's going to work out because you didn't believe. And, you know, it's like you get in this terrible cycle of like negativity, because you're just sort of trapped in this, I don't deserve this, I don't belong to be here. So it gets talked about a lot. And I'm wondering how this conversation plays out with more, you know, actual psychology rather than the sort of way social media has manipulated it into being this buzzy topic that we talk about.
Ah, okay. There's another factor, social media, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to restate what you said to clarify that in the witch community, they discuss imposter syndrome because they feel if their spells are not working out that they're imposter witches, kind of.
Yeah, right. Like, yes, your spell work isn't working out because you don't believe that you deserve XYZ, or you feel like you're like you doubt what you're doing, and that the seed of doubt will inevitably cripple your efforts, because without having, you know, true belief that you deserve these things, that the universe isn't going to give them to you. And it's like this weird loop that you get stuck in, because it's like people want to have confirmation of things before they believe in them, which gets really tough. It's in a tough circle. And I think it's also the self-doubt is really big. You know, I want this thing, and I'm going to work really hard at it, but it doesn't matter how hard I work, because if I don't believe that I deserve it, then it's never going to happen. Right? So it's like this self-serving prophecy thing, you know?
I'm going to give you my best impression of Carl Jung with a Swiss accent. This is nice. Almost word for word from the BBC interview film. Belief is a very difficult word for me. I don't believe, I can't believe it. If there is sufficient evidence for a certain hypothesis, then I shall accept the hypothesis, of course. But I don't allow myself to believe just for the sake of believing. Okay.
Good Swiss accent, Dad.
Not really. So I think that's a sidebar. Belief, see, is a difficult word.
It is.
And a difficult thing. And then to say, to force yourself to believe something, or I mean, the wish fulfillment part, right? To force yourself to believe is a Jedi mind trick, something like that. But except it doesn't work when you have to force yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will give another quote from that same interview. The interviewer asked Jung, do you believe in God?
Oh.
Difficult to answer. I don't believe. I know.
Oh. Really? He says he knows?
Yes.
Whoa.
Okay. Now, and that was a very controversial statement the moment he said it.
Yeah.
And it was broadcast on the BBC, and then people on both sides, you know, were upset. Yeah. Like, sort of more the scientific community was upset that he would mm-hmm. say something like that. The religious community was very upset that he, the other way.
Right.
But I think people are not understanding what he means. And I know what he means. I mean, it is an analyst thing. When he says, I know, what he means is, I know my own experience.
Right.
And
right.
I trust that. And in fact, that is all that I know, is my own experience. Mm,
that makes sense. Yeah.
And see, where does belief come in that? Do you believe in your own experience? It's kind of a silly question. I mean, it.
Mm.
Now, people struggle with acceptance. Do you accept your own experience?
Oh,
do you
reject
your own experience? Okay. But see, then that this complicated word, belief.
It is a complicated word.
And okay, so let's go back to the second definition that you read.
Yeah. Let me bring it up again here. It was imposter syndrome, the dilemma between who we are and who we are perceived to be.
Right. And so, in a way, that's everybody. Right. And then the seed of doubt. I mean, of course, there is a difference between the way we are and the way we are perceived to be. Of course, there is. Always.
Yeah.
Always in every case.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, and then in Jungian terms, we call that the persona, which is just a Latin word for a mask.
Mm.
And then, you know, I don't know what you guys talked about when you were teenagers, but in the 70s, we talked about, you know, being real, and you had to get rid
authentic.
Of your mask. Get authentic.
Yeah.
And,
authentic, yeah.
You're not being real, man.
Like, nice.
No mask, drop your mask, be real. And it seems so profound at the time. But the persona concept is, of course, we have a social persona, a work persona.
Right.
We have many different kind of personae for different situations. And we should. It's not so. There's the concept of an integrated persona that even though it is a mask and the role, you're being an actor when you're at work, you're acting.
Right. Yeah.
You're acting like you want to be there. You're acting like you care.
Right.
Or something. You're in the role of employee and
yes.
you play that role like any actor. With you can add your own flair to it, right?
Of course, yeah.
You're doing the role in your way, your uniqueness. See, and that's an integrated persona. So I just this thing that comes back to the difference between the inner self and the outer persona,
right?
As a conflict, is true for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say.
Yeah.
So actually, I'm coming back to the first definition, right?
Right.
Instead of acknowledging their capabilities as well as their efforts, they often attribute accomplishments to external or transient causes.
Right. Yeah. So
as well, it was only luck. It was only good.
Exactly.
Good timing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, see, is an internal process. Like, that is a story in the person's head. So,
like,
you see,
I don't deserve this.
So it's not really being out and playing a role. It's a thing in their head.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how much imposter syndrome plays out as far as external world. I don't think, because it's a very much an internal thing. Like, I don't believe that I deserve this. I don't believe that other people should be listening to me. Like, people, you know, like you, I see that a lot with writers in the witch community, that they'll be like, I wrote this book and now I'm in this position of power and I don't really understand why, like I don't feel like I should be somebody that other people look up to, things like that. And I think that self-doubt is really the key factor in it, that we just, you know, these things happen and then we're, you know, we wanted this so bad. Like, it's, we, you know, we wanted this, we worked towards this. Like, I'll continue with like writing a book. Like, we worked really hard towards it and we found a publisher and we got it out. And then it's like, but do I really, am I really an expert in this? Like, you know, why should people listen to me? Because then that self-doubt comes up, that like little seed that says, you know, you're faking it comes out. And it's like, well, maybe we are faking it in a way, right? Like, you know,
of course. That persona, I mean, right? We're faking a lot of things. Sure. That's the persona aspect. It's required. I mean, that's mm-hmm. okay. Now the analyst in me gets interested. So let's say everything you said about this person and the mm-hmm. book and everything.
Yeah.
You know, am I really an expert? Okay, all these thoughts, let's call them intrusive thoughts.
Okay.
Right? And then what happens?
And then what happens? Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, let's say they've written this book and it's gotten published and now people are buying it. Right. I know people are asking them questions and people are asking them to go talk about the subject in public in front of people. And they have now all of a sudden they have a social media following and people are asking them questions and asking them to show them how to do things because they're the expert. You know, I see, you know, because you watch these people that grow on social media and then all of a sudden they become really popular and then they're like, I don't really know what I'm doing. And I find it interesting because when I made I have an online course for flower essences on how to make flower essences. If anybody's interested in that, when I was making that, they had like an introductory video on the website I was using. And the person on there said, you only need to be one step ahead of your audience to be able to be their teacher. And I was like, wow. Because then I think that's, you know, like you only be one step ahead of them. So it's like, wait a minute.
That's a good way to fake it. Yeah.
Right? Right? You only have to be one step ahead of them. So then I was like, whoa. Because now we have this whole culture of online courses, right? And you can buy an online course from literally anyone. And what, especially in the witch community, what makes this person more qualified than this person? Right. And we're talking about esoteric things. We're talking about astrology. Right. So if, let's say there are probably over 1,000 different online courses on basic astrology that you can take. And why should we believe one person over another person? Why is one person's way of doing it better than another person? And like, so as a consumer on the other end, you just get completely overwhelmed because it's just like there's all these people who are experts and are, who really is an expert and who's just one step ahead. Right? It can be very confusing.
Good. You could go to Trump University. You know, and, oh, wait.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
Oh, wait. Now you can't. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think that's like the state of New York shut that down.
I mean, right? That people can put anything out there.
I know.
And that's it's called marketing.
I know. And it's the age of information. I'm saying it in quotation marks because it's like also the age of misinformation. We have AI writing majority of it. And even the people that I made my course with are now selling that you can use their AI program to write your course in 5 days. They're saying in 5 days you can take anything and make an online course with it with AI.
Of course you can. Of course
you
can.
Yeah, but what is any of it true? Like, how do
does that matter? See, there you go. We live in a fake world. It is a fake world. I mean, I was thinking, yeah, as a writer, I'm on the publisher side of Amazon and mm-hmm. we got a notification that they were going to limit how many books you could publish. Yeah. And they said, okay, yeah, we're going to limit it to 3 books a day.
How is anybody publishing 3 books a day?
See what I like?
Right?
You're gonna limit it to like, wait a minute.
That's a lot.
Because you do the AI, you tell it, I want you to write a book about XYZ, you cut, paste it, put it
You
in,
don't even read it yourself. You just
put it in
eat it up
Kindle,
there.
up it goes, because you keep throwing stuff in the wall. Hey, and if it catches
Right.
on,
Then all you
see?
need is one, right, to catch
Yeah,
on.
right.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yes.
The world of
So
AI.
I think this is adding context to the idea of imposter syndrome, but
Well,
because
yeah.
now, but we're totally away from it because now we're talking
Oh,
about
no, we're talking about external
the
stuff. Yeah.
consumer
I know. It's hard not to talk about the other stuff.
seeing people who are actually imposters.
Right.
They're not,
Yeah.
they don't have imposter syndrome. They are imposters.
I saw another quote that was really good that said, the only people who don't get imposter syndrome are imposters.
Exactly.
I was like, that makes sense. Yeah.
See?
Yeah, I just
No, no remorse.
no remorse. Yeah,
But
and it's I know it's particularly bad in the mushroom foraging community right now too, because that can literally get you killed. And
it's
if
terrifying
yeah, for
that.
those who don't know, I teach mushroom foraging classes, and we go out and we forage and I teach. But you need the experience. If you let AI write that, people are going to be out there picking jack-o'-lanterns and dying, because it's like some of these mushrooms will literally get you killed. And you're letting AI write it and you have no idea what you're talking about. So, yeah, AI inflating the imposters out there. But flipping it back to the other side, so like, what can we do with it was another one of my questions, right? So when we're in this situation, like I get it sometimes with my own business. I'm starting to, grow and get more popular, and people ask me questions, and every once in a while you're like, do I really know about this? Am I really an expert about this thing? And I think that it's certain things that I am an expert at, and I tell myself, I have a degree in biology. I know what I'm talking about, to remind myself. But I think it can be really hard for people to do that, because you get caught in that downward spiral. I didn't know from the psychology aspect if there
Right.
was more on that.
I mean, psychology today is saying 25 to 30% of high achievers may suffer from imposter syndrome, and that 70% of all adults may experience imposter syndrome at least once in their lifetime.
At least once, I would imagine, yeah. I
And
think it's like healthy to get it at least
it's,
sometimes.
and also that it is important to remember that imposter syndrome is not a DSM-5 diagnosis. You can't be diagnosed with imposter syndrome because in that sense it's not a real thing. Psychiatrically, it's a real thing.
Well,
So
yeah, I don't think they're going to give you
psychologically,
medication for it,
I
but
mean, one thing we haven't talked about is self-sabotage.
yes, definitely.
So when I ask you, and then what? I mean, if you have intrusive thoughts, about being discovered, found out, that you're not an expert, or you don't know as much as people seem to think that you do, then it, you see what I mean? It's that's an internal state, and you have some anxiety. There's a way, and then yeah, you could work on that with your therapist, but it's really not a thing yet until something happens.
Some sort of manifestation of
Which would be now, if you are self-sabotaging,
it.
okay, we got to talk about that. Okay, this is now interfering with your life because it's gone over to self-sabotage. Right, which is this crazy dance of I have thoughts that I'm not an expert, and then unconsciously at just the wrong moment, I prove that I'm not an expert and get
Right.
found.
Yeah, like you say something stupid in an interview or
And
on social media. There's so many
and
outlets.
So, I mean, so why would somebody do that? And the answer is, it's not, again, back to, we talked about the ego. The ego is not doing that. The ego is feeling afraid. The ego is feeling anxiety. It's sort of unconsciously you're making that slip. Because there's a deeper seated wish. I wish to stop having this anxiety, this imposter syndrome, and the way that I can not have it is to actually get found out.
Right.
And then I will feel better because I won't have this anxiety.
You have a whole different type of anxiety.
See, but that's the unconscious.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Exactly.
I mean, the whole thing slips of the tongue, every, you know. That goes way back to Freud, you know, in 19-
Freudian slip, right?
Yes, the very famous, the Freudian slip, which the clinical name for it is a parataxis, by the way.
Parataxis?
Parataxis, yes. Oh, I just caught you in a parataxis.
A parataxis, okay.
He has all kinds of crazy examples of slips of the tongue that are hilarious and disturbing, and I mean it's just great.
Wow.
The one I remember most is there was this guy who was going to meet a very famous person who, let's say, you know, Barack Obama kind of famous.
Okay.
And he was so nervous in meeting this famous person that let's say Barack asked, you know, what's your name, and he said, my name is Barack.
Oh no.
And what do you do, sir? I'm a politician.
Oh no. Yeah, that's embarrassing.
Yes.
That's funny. I could see that though. I could see that happening.
I'm so afraid of being an imposter that then I slipped in the tongue and I am an imposter.
Right. Exactly. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy like we were talking about last week.
Right. Right. Self-fulfilling prophecy, self-sabotage.
Self-sabotage.
I mean, that's where it could start to interfere.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that.
I mean, let's say, I guess there's sort of a class thing, social thing.
Okay.
Let's say, you know, that you come from a poor background.
Okay.
Or maybe not poor, but lower middle class West Virginia.
Sure.
With Podunk High School and things like that. You go into the world, and the world is more sophisticated than that.
It sure is, yeah.
You've never been exposed to anything like that. Never been exposed to classical music, fine wine, fine dining, fashion, dressing up, clothes. I mean, like,
this is you going to college?
Until you were 18, you never had any of those kinds of experience. No, I'm not. No, it's a friend of mine.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you could see how you could feel like an imposter when well, there's a kind of pretending, right? It's like, well, my friends are taking me to this restaurant in New York.
Oh, yeah. You have to pretend.
I'm pretending I know which fork is which, you know, or how to look at a menu and decide what I will pick because I've never heard of any of these things. Never once. You
just order what the person next to you ordered.
Something like that, right?
Wow.
So then you could feel inferior. You could feel less than.
Like you were faking it. Yeah. And nevertheless, when they took you to Japan,
oh,
you really had to fake it.
Let's not get started with that. But let's say that you have an advanced degree.
Yeah.
And you're very well educated. You know, you're in higher education until you're 42 years old. like post-grad school, and there's no school for sophistication.
No.
You can be as educated as possible and not be sophisticated.
Yep. Yeah, those two things are not synonymous. Yeah.
Because you kind of have to grow up with it.
Yeah. So you're saying you felt like an imposter?
I personally did not and have not. But I'm saying I can understand those circumstances.
Mm-hmm. I could see that too.
Now, someone told me that it appears that women suffer more from imposter syndrome than men. That in fact, it's very few men ever feel that kind of thing, but a lot of women feel that at work or in a work environment.
Yeah, definitely.
What do you think?
I think that's interesting because I can't really speak on the male perspective as a woman, but I know that there are men in the witch community, but I do feel like it comes up a lot in our community because I think there is something inherent in the witch community about us being people who are more on the sidelines, who are different, who are do not conform maybe to societal norms. And so for us, the feeling of being an imposter might be just inherently more there because we are people who are more on the sidelines to begin with. And so I don't think that it's just women specifically. I would think that it might be, you know, maybe even higher in the LGBTQ population or in literally anybody that feels like they're more of an outsider. Because when you have spent your whole life being an outsider and then you find a community of people who are like you, like there are other witches or, you know, in whatever, you know, group that you're in, and you have that sense, that feeling of belonging that you've never had before, that you question it. And you're like, is this really real? Like, how do I get to feel like I belong somewhere? Because I don't belong anywhere because I'm an outsider. But then all of a sudden you're with all these people who are outsiders too. And you get this feeling of belief. It's really hard to accept that you might belong somewhere. And that there might be other people that you can form a group or even friends with, you know? And then because you've spent your whole life being an outsider, you're worried about, you know, they're going to find out I'm an outsider, right? So I think it's just inherently higher in those populations. And so I think, you know, when you're a cis white man, you might not get that too often because you grow up being in the majority, right?
No,
and
no.
So why,
well,
why would you feel not like you're not part of something?
Not anymore.
We're changing that. Yeah.
And that is, you feel that way as an inherent aspect of the patriarchy.
Oh, well, yes,
As a white cis man, you just feel that.
Right.
And
I mean, you can look at the Ken in the Barbie movie, right?
Yes. Okay, so no, you give an interesting spin to it in the sense that what you're saying is that the feeling like an outsider and then finding belonging and then feeling like an imposter witch, like don't know if I'm really part of this community. They seem to think that I am, but what if I'm faking it? Something like
exactly.
That.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then how do you go about addressing those feelings inside of yourself that says, I'm never going to belong anywhere. It's like, how can I be accepted by people?
So, you know? I mean, the typical thing of imposter syndrome is actually kind of the opposite, right? It's that the patriarchy, let us say.
Patriarchy, yeah. Uh-huh.
Demands conformity.
Right.
So that at work, you have to dress the way that everyone is expected to dress. You have to talk the way that everybody is expected to talk. And then depending on your job or what you do, you have to know what everybody's expected to know.
Yeah.
So you go and play that role.
Yeah.
Knowing that you're gay, you're a witch, you know, knowing that you don't really conform.
Right. You're just playing
and
along.
Then you feel like an imposter to that world.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like, well, I guess I can never get a promotion because once they find out, you know, that my hair is actually purple, you know, they're going to fire me. And yeah, if they only knew, then they would fire me.
If they only knew, that's a good phrase.
So that's the confrontation with the demand for conformity and this inner sense of knowing, I don't conform.
Right.
But what you're saying in the witch community, it's the other way around. It's a finding community about a community of outsiders.
Of outsiders, yeah.
Then feeling like you don't belong because you never thought it would be possible.
Exactly.
To belong.
Yeah, I think that's what comes up, really. I do. I think it's hard for a lot of people, and I think that's why it comes up so frequently. I mean, like I said, you can't really scroll through for more than a minute on Instagram or TikTok just looking at general witch stuff without sort of seeing something that's about imposter syndrome and about how, you know, here are ways that you can feel like you're not an imposter. You know, carry these crystals, work with these herbs, all of these things. And it's, I just think it's a deeper thing than a lot of that. And I'm not, you know, bashing on anybody's crystals and herbs and stuff like that. But I think it's a general sort of lack of being able to see that you can fit in somewhere. You know, a lot of witches, even I've, you know, prescribed to being a solo practitioner. Like I don't have a coven or anything like that. And there's something inherently that is isolating about that. And so then you go into a community, like I'm doing a market or something like that. And there are a lot of other, you know, witchy people around. And it's like, you know, that people are asking you questions about stuff and how do you do this? And how do you do that? And how do you work with this? And I think it's very easy to start questioning yourself, you know, it's like, do it. These things that I've been doing for so long that work for me, maybe I'm just different than everybody else, right? And so, yeah, I think that happens to all of us. And then I think particularly people that end up being more of an authority figure, they get into that as well, because it's like how, especially in our world that we live in with AI and all this other stuff, it's like, how do I make myself an authority? What gives me more authority over a subject than somebody else? So like I'm going to be talking at a Witch City Salem, which is an event that's coming up in July. And so this is really one of the first times that I'm sort of feeling like it a little bit, I guess, because I'm going to be giving a presentation on flower essences, and I'm going to be with people who are much bigger than I am in the witch community, and that they're, you know, people who are, you know, books, dozens of books, that have been in the community for 20, 30 plus years. And it can be a little intimidating, you know. Well, I do find myself to be more of an authority on my specific field of flower essences when it comes to other forms of magic. I do feel like I'm, you know, maybe I'm faking it, you know, sometimes, but at the same, you know, I go back on that. I trust in myself, and there's a trust there. And I think that a lot of people have trouble with trusting themselves.
Yes.
Again, that goes back to ego development as well, because
it does. And I mean, another concept that is related would be a basic sense of insecurity.
Yeah.
Underneath that, it does come from childhood trauma, or at least I guess nowadays we call it adverse childhood events.
Adverse childhood events?
ACE, adverse childhood events.
Wow.
Create a basic sense of insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, back, you know, we talked about the stages of development and Erik Erikson, that is, the first stage is trust versus basic mistrust. Again, in the world, in people, an insecure attachment style.
Insecure, you know,
So if a person, which many people do have a basic insecurity. I mean, it's like you mask over and mask over your insecurities, but they come out.
Mm-hmm. They come out anyway.
You still feel them.
Right. So as many times as you make over your persona and your ego, and you think that you're, you know, starting to maybe believe something or belong somewhere, and then those insecurities bubble up, no matter what group you're in, whether you're at work or in the witch community or you're teaching about painting or corals,
right,
or
right,
diving or something, right? It doesn't matter what you're doing.
How about a fixed mindset of I am unlovable? And that comes from an adverse childhood event.
Right, right. And or I'm only lovable if I do X, Y, Z or whatever. Yeah.
And then how do you work with something like that, right? I mean,
yeah,
because
that's a question.
I mean, because the wound is so deep that you can't really tell a person, you know, here's 10 affirmations and say them each one every day, put them on the refrigerator, and in 2 weeks you'll be good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. I wish it was that easy.
Yeah. Like, no.
Like, no, you need therapy, like years and years of therapy. Yeah.
Or
there's nothing bad about that.
Cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah,
right?
Like we were talking about last week. Yeah.
Right. It's that, well, you believe you're unlovable. Obviously, this is an irrational idea.
Yeah. We have to work on that.
And we will now, you know, give you the counter thought of you know, I am lovable. I am worthy every day in every way. I'm getting better and better. I'm not sure that's a rational thought.
Thought either, yeah.
But okay. Sure, things like that.
And so would you say that's all ego development or?
It is. As in development too.
Well, yeah.
I mean, this is pre-ego. This is, you know, age 1 to 3.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, it's development, and again, it's not your fault. You don't get to, when you're 3 years old,
right.
You're not in charge of whether you're going to be able to avoid an adverse childhood event.
right.
And it happens a lot, and then you work with it, you know. I mean, you got the rest of your life to work with it. The whole thing is, don't let it interfere. Like, again, the self-sabotaging part would
be part of that,
that it's sort of sad, verging on tragic, right? That for a person to have a fixed idea, like I am unlovable, turning that constantly into self-sabotage.
Right. Or I don't deserve this, or I don't deserve good things, or whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, this is sad, even tragic, as opposed to,
yeah.
Can we find a way to let go of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that also goes back to shadow work, which was one of our earlier episodes that we did, I think a little too early, but we didn't quite have the baseline. But that is what we talk about. And again, in the witch community, that's part of the doing your shadow work is figuring out where these concepts come from, where these ideas that live within us come from, digging them out. And so like, if you're someone who's constantly having trouble with imposter syndrome, you know, quote unquote, doing your work and figuring out, why do I have these thoughts all the time, right? Like, why do I keep self-sabotaging? I think if you are a listener and you're somebody who's dealing with this, I definitely think that going to cognitive behavioral therapy is something that would be good for you to do. But you can do that along with the witchcraft stuff, right? Like, you can carry your crystal and go to therapy at the same time.
Imagine that.
Yep. Yeah. So I do think that you can do both at the same time and that it would be beneficial. But I think the basic need comes down to being curious about where these things come from. You know, you have to have a sense of curiosity, because if you just automatically assume that your thoughts are true, then we're going to go down that slippery rabbit hole there.
Right. Well, so there's curiosity and self-insight. So
self-insight, yeah.
Yeah, you just combine the two, which is, see, that's a powerful combination.
Mm-hmm.
That, yes, this does require some self-insight. But the curiosity is the part to ask the question.
Exactly. Exactly. Why do I keep feeling like this?
even to think to ask the question.
Right. Well,
Because
and that's ego, right? You have to have the ego sense to even do that.
an observing ego, an ego
Observing ego. Yeah.
outside of the ego observing and then asking questions, as opposed to someone with absolutely no self-insight,
That's
they
true.
never ask the question, never even think to ask, like, what question?
Yeah, that's
Like,
so
what?
hard for me to even think that you can't think to ask the question, but it's true. When I found out that there are some people with no inner monologue, I just like,
I've been reading that.
whoa.
That's come out lately, right?
Yeah, it's been re more
That's,
recent.
I haven't looked at the research because it's like, and they know this how. See what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but and interesting, right?
It seems really peaceful to me to have no inner monologue. Like,
Yes.
seems
Well,
awfully quiet,
a cow is peaceful too.
right?
And there's nothing wrong with being a cow.
To just go along doing what you're doing and not even think about any of it.
Think about
It
it,
seems very peaceful.
right? It's hot. Where's the shade?
Right?
I'm
I'm hungry.
hungry.
I'm
Where's
gonna
the
eat.
grass?
I'm gonna go to the bathroom. Okay, that's done. Like, just one slow thing happening at a time. That would be amazing, right? But we weren't born that way, were we, Dad?
Well, I was going to say, some people would call that mindfulness, the one thing.
Oh,
See?
to just be at one thing at a time, right? They're ultimately grounded and just like only in the moment.
See?
I saw another meme recently that said, people without critical thinking skills awfully do seem peaceful. Like, if you can't think about things that are going on, it just seems like be awfully quiet in there.
I put it in one of my books somewhere. Yeah, there's a lot of people, right? When you don't have that critical thinking skill or self-insight or curiosity, then you just go through life. That it's called, locus of control is a psychological concept, which means
Locus, like the animal?
like the location.
Oh, okay.
Same Latin word, right?
Okay.
Where is the locus of control? And it's either internal or external. And the answer is just that pretty much everybody feels much better when they feel an internal locus of control, is that I feel
Right,
like I
yeah.
have some control.
Some autonomy, right?
External locus of control means I feel like I don't have control over the things that happen. So back to your thing about lack of critical thinking skills, no self-insight.
Right.
It just feels like things happen. It
Right.
just happened to me. I'm like, oh, this happened. Like, oh, that was bad. Oh, and then this happened. And oh, that was bad. And that's it. It just, well,
That's it. That's it. There's nothing
the
past
things,
that.
yes.
I don't know. It's a
Like,
double-edged sword.
right? A piano
Right?
fell on me.
Right. I don't know.
What can anybody do? It just happens, these things.
Yeah. Or I forget which
With no
concept we were
cure,
talking about with the
no.
falling in the hole over and over again, right?
Yes,
Yeah.
yes,
I forget
yes.
which concept that was.
That's getting out of a complex.
Oh, getting out. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Where you just keep
But
falling in the
think
hole.
about that if you have no curiosity to even ask a question about, well, why is the piano falling on my head?
Right? Why? What was a
Why?
piano in
Yeah, it's a
the sky?
that's a movie thing, right? The piano falling
Oh,
on.
the movie. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, I'm looking at my list of questions, Dad. I think we've answered most of them. I think the last one I want to talk about is sort of how do we work with this when it comes up? So I think we've talked about it a little bit, but thinking more action steps, like I don't think most people, when they feel imposter syndrome, are going to immediately go to a therapist. So some things that people can work with And as far, like I said before, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy was a good one if you start feeling like it's impeding your life. But for the most part, I think we can find some, again, affirmations do work well. I think reminding yourself of all the resources that you have, the time that you've spent building things up to get yourself to where you are. You know, and even if you are at that one step ahead of your clients, and reminding yourself that you are one step ahead at least than everybody else. But if you had somebody that came to you that was working on this, what kind of like homework would you give them, Dad, to work on?
Meditate? Well, yeah, meditation always, of course. I'm not a cognitive behavioral therapist, so I don't do homework.
Well,
the issue is, I would say,
bring
me your dreams, and then we will see if this appears in a dream
in your which dreams.
You feel like an imposter, or there's a social situation that you're, see what I mean? It will come up in a dream.
And, Can you think of any dreams that have come up about that?
We'll discuss it. The classic anxiety dream, right? I go to a party and I talk to three or four people, and after half an hour, I realize I forgot to put my pants on.
Okay. Yeah. Like the classic.
The classic sort of.
Showing up to school naked. That's.
Without realizing. And then the turn in the dream is the realization of inferiority or embarrassment of.
And then when you talk about
a dream like that, it's like, well, I mean, this, you know, is a dream about being embarrassed in a social situation. What does that make you think of? do you actually feel embarrassed when you're in
social situations?
Oh, well, yes.
Maybe I've been feeling a little bit like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah, I just want to give people an idea of what to look out for if they're having some repetitive dreams about this kind of stuff. I could see that coming. I'm going to be interested in what my dreams come up for me as I get closer to this event where I'm going to be presenting in front of all these people. So I'll keep you updated about that. Oh, all right, Dad. Well, I think this is a nice little chunk of info here on imposter syndrome. And I hope our listeners, if you're feeling any of this kind of stuff, to let us know. And I want to know how you guys work with your imposter syndrome at home. So thank you, Dad, for giving us more of the psychology side of all of this. And we'll be back next week with another topic.
Take care.
Thanks, Dad. For tuning in. We appreciate you taking a listen. If you want to learn more about us, you can go to our website, ajungianandawitch.com. Feel free to reach out to us with any questions that you have at ajungianandawitch@gmail.com. You can find out more about me, Molly, at queenofcupsapothecary.com. And to find more from Dad, head over to YouTube and look for History of Ideas. Or click that link at the bottom of the show notes. So thanks again, everybody. We hope you have a wonderful week, and we'll see you back on Monday with another topic.